Shilling Show continues here. It's a Tuesday edition of the program. Always pleased to welcome to the program David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management. And we've got nine ways to secure your finances. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. And David, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, so how serious is this problem? We hear about it a lot. We might even know a person or two who has been compromised. But is this a big time or just getting a lot of press?
Yeah, I think while a physical terrorist attack is horrific, cyber attack or identity theft is much more common. And I don't know how common this is for your listeners, but most of us at the firm have had one or two or even three different notices in the mail that our information has been compromised and, you know, some break-in has gotten our credit cards and now we're sending you new credit cards and they've gotten our financial information. So among the clients that we see and among ourselves and among just the internet today, I think a cyber attack has probably happened on most of your listening audience of some of their information being compromised. And I just assume right now that the cyber terrorists probably have more information and can impersonate me better than I can. They probably have my social security number. They probably have my credit card numbers. They probably hacked into government databases. They've probably hacked into medical records. They probably hacked into most stuff. And it's becoming increasingly complex. And a lot of the cyber attacks are coming from overseas, from America's enemies around the world.
We're talking with David Murata on ways to secure your finances. So there's institutional security and personal security, and it sounds like a lot of what you just said is a breach of institutional security. However, I mean, I guess people could be targeted individually at home.
They can, and quite often they do that through viruses on your computer or spyware that tracks what you're typing or monitors sort of where you're going and things like that. That's very common. If your computer is getting slower and slower, it's probably because of all the monitoring software on it. Some of it is legitimate. Most of it maybe is. And when I say legitimate, it is companies that are doing it simply for their own profit and not trying to rip off your identity or your finances. You might not consider that legitimate. Yeah. I kind of don't. I kind of don't want them to be tracking everything that I do. But some of it is malicious, and sometimes y'all click somewhere and and you don't have the correct protections in place, and then your data will get compromised.
So there is protection, and you should do what to your personal computer?
Yeah, so there's a number of things you can do. So the easiest and most important probably is to have good virus software on your computer. You might also want to have some of the things that takes off all the monitoring software or removes all of that. If you have a laptop that you're out and about and it's got sensitive information on it, you may want to encrypt your hard drive. So if your laptop is stolen, you haven't given away the keys to your kingdom. If you keep any sensitive information such as passwords, we recommend you get a password vault with a very secure password that you have on that. I have literally hundreds of different passwords in hundreds of different sites. I use a program called KeePass, which allows encryption of all that information. And then if they get a hold of that file, unless they have the decryption on that, which is very strong, password, then they can't get at any of it. And that way I can keep track of hundreds of different passwords on hundreds of different sites.
I have something similar and I really like it. I guess the other thing to do in addition to the software, the virus software, the antivirus software, is there are other things you can do with your browser, the plugins you can get that kind of cover your tracks or keep Facebook from following you wherever you go. And I have a number of those things installed in my browser, disconnecting me and making me affirmatively click on Flash when I want to see it. And there's a lot of that available. People, I think, are not aware unless they look.
Yeah, and if you've ever been to one site and looked at one thing that you were shopping for, and then for the next 10 sites you go to, they keep reminding you of that thing that you were just shopping for, it just goes to show you that your security is not very intact and they know where you've been. And now they're following you around, marketing that thing to you again and again, hoping you'll click on it again and you'll go back and buy it.
David, you mentioned that you have hundreds of different passwords, and this is the next point that we want to tell people. What is the wisdom regarding passwords?
Yeah, the most important thing is most people have a very soft target for their passwords, meaning that they use their email address as the user ID, and they have one password they use on most sites. All that means is the minute a site promises you something, if y'all register, you register with them and you put in your email address and you create a password on that site.
Mm-hmm.
They now have your email address and they have the password that you're using on hundreds of other sites. They're not a legitimate place. Maybe they give you whatever it is you were asking for, but now they've got your information and the keys to the kingdom. And they go and they automatically use that on all of your other sites that you might have. So they're going to try it on all the bank accounts, all the bank sites. They're going to try it on Facebook. They're going to try it on the typical places like Gmail that you might log in.
Mm-hmm.
And they will break into most of your sites, and then they'll have most of your information. So it's critically important that you use a different password on all of your secure sites and that it be unique to each site. And that way, if one password gets hacked, it won't hack all of the others. Now, for most people, they're probably groaning, thinking, I have a hard enough time remembering the 5 passwords I have.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking me to have 500. And that's where having something that is a password vault, where you click on the site, it opens the browser, and it maybe even automatically fills it in for you, is critical. The other thing is that there's a list of about 1,000 passwords, and it turns out about 60% of all passwords is in that list. And that's just terrible. So if you have passwords which are common words and common phrases, or things like let me in that are all words and they're very common things that frustrated people on the internet make their password, it's just terrible. It's a terrible thing to do. The passwords do not have any names in them. And if you use a number, it increases the complexity of the password by factors of 10. And if you use a special character, it increases it even more. So one of the best things to do is to pick some phrase and have all the letters in the phrase be part of your password for various places, and you pick a phrase per site. So, for example, if you know, you could have something like, I love the Shilling Show 5 days a week. and there you go. There's a password that nobody will guess because it's all random characters and it's got a 5 stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
Put an exclamation point at the end, and it will take years and years, thousands of years for high-speed computers to ever break a password like that.
All right, let's go to the break. We come back on the other side. Continuing 9 ways to secure your finances. David Morata is with us, and we welcome your calls at 977-1070. So let's go to the phones and say hello to Earl. Earl, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Hey, good morning, or good evening, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just wanted to ask a quick question. Now, I've watched my credit score and, you know, your debt to ratio income. I really understand it a lot. I had borrowed some money to buy a vehicle this morning, and the bank told me that my credit score was incredibly lower than what you can get from, like, Equifax or TransUnion, and they couldn't explain it to me. So that just happens you have a guest on there that's talking about your finances, and can he explain that the difference? You know, it's if Equifax tells you have a 760 score and the bank says it's 717, you know, where is that difference, and how do you control that? Because these three entities control our life all the time.
Great, let's get a response.
I'll sign off and listen.
Yeah, Earl, thank you very much. David?
Yeah, I'm actually not sure why you would get a different score in such a short period of time. We recommend that people actually check the three credit bureaus in terms of what information they have. Sometimes they have some very bogus information that is because your credit has been hacked, and your credit can be hacked by somebody filling out a tax return in your name and filing it with the IRS, and then they get some refund from some bogus tax return. Then you go to file your tax return, and suddenly it's the IRS says someone's already filed that tax return. That's a very common scam that's often done from prisons in the United States because they have nothing to lose, and they're just trying to collect money that way. And the IRS has a very hard time getting that money back once it's sent it out. We recommend, for all of our clients, we recommend that you lock your credit down. It's a process with all three credit bureaus. It costs $10 per credit bureau. And when you lock it down, no one else can access your credit. Your credit is always denied. Suddenly your junk mail goes down tremendously because people use those lists to say, I would like everybody who's got a credit score above 750. And the credit bureaus actually make money off of you selling your information to other people. So if you lock down your credit, no one can get credit. You can't even get credit. But you have 3 different keys, one with each of the credit bureaus. And when you want to, you can go in and unlock your credit. You can unlock your credit for a number of days, or you can unlock your credit for a specific organization. So the inconvenience is when you're in that store and you want to apply for a credit card, it will be denied. But the good part is if you want to get credit, you just need to wait one day, unlock your credit, and then you can have it back. if you've locked down your credit, then the chances of somebody doing something in your credit score are very, very low because your credit's locked down. So it's a way of, if you will, securing your credit score against everyone other than your own bad mistakes. And that's a great thing that we recommend doing.
All right, let's talk about credit cards versus debit cards.
Yeah, the only right answer to debit or credit is to say credit. If you give someone the keys to your debit card to be able to put something on your debit card and something is fraudulently put on your debit card, it is very difficult to get back. It requires months and months of work. It requires, and it may not ever be able to be gotten back because the money is transferred out and there's no protections. If you say credit, the credit cards all have all kinds of protections on it. And I've done this numerous times throughout my life. When a vendor has failed to do what they said they were going to do, I take the credit card that I used, I turn it over, I call the 1-800 number, and I say I'd like to dispute that charge until the vendor does what he says he's going to do. And inevitably, I have won every case I've done that on. So I bought a camera. It was supposed to come with a large memory card. They didn't send it to me with a large memory card. They said, oh, no, the website was incorrect. That deal really wasn't there. And then they said, yeah, I know, but that's the only memory card we have. I turned it over. I disputed the entire charge on the camera, which certainly gets their attention. And then finally they sent me the memory card. I've done that with a couple of long-distance services and other things like that, where if you have a complaint, you turn it over. It requires you to sort of go through the process of disputing the claim. But all of those vendors cannot risk making MasterCard and Visa and American Express mad at them because it's their very livelihood. And if they and they have to win the claim, if they lose the claim, then those credit card companies automatically take the money back and credit it back into your account.
One of the things, and we've got just a couple minutes left with Dave and Rod, securing your finances. One of the things that you say is to beware of emails and phone calls that may intend to steal your identity. Boy, there's a lot of those going around. I had a call from someone the other day who was really confused by someone who called him, was asking a lot of information.
There are. I mean, I get those all the time. Someone calls up and they're pretending to be, I'm calling about your credit card. Mm-hmm. And then I say, I don't know what you're talking about. And then they say, well, can you give me the credit card number? You know, and then it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's incredibly common, and it happens regularly. So the best thing to do is to just always be cynical. As cynical as I am, they still surprise me because mm-hmm. they pose as government agencies. They pose as government bureaus. They pose as insurance. Medical insurance, adjusters, and if you have any dealings with the government, it's very easy for people to impersonate the government. I actually usually know that they're not actually government officials because they sound too competent, and the government usually doesn't call you because they don't have that kind of manpower and personnel. They usually send you some letter, but the letters you get in the mail can also impersonate government agencies, and I get them all the time that tell me I need to file this with the state. And they'll do that for me for a $50 or $100 charge. And it's something I can file with the state for free. And this agency is trying to spoof the fact that they will satisfy my compliance with the government, but they're pretending to be from the government at the same time. I even have emails that I'm not allowed to block for compliance purposes. And I get people who are spamming that because they know, because that's public record mm-hmm. and it's put out on the SEC website. So there's all kinds of things like that that are just absolutely terrible, and we're constantly being bombarded with it.
David, you say to claim your Social Security account. What does that mean, and how does somebody do that?
Yeah, so Social Security's gone paperless, and there's an account that each person has. And to get into the account, you just need to know your Social Security number, your name, and a few identifying pieces of information. Unfortunately, there are pieces of information that a good sleuth could find on the internet simply by hacking the right database or by even looking up some public information on you. They might be able to find that information. So when you go on, you have to ensure who you are. Then it creates a Social Security account for you, and you should secure that with a very, very secure password so no one else can get on and create your Social Security, hack your Social Security account. If you don't create your Social Security account, the Social Security Administration is waiting for someone to pretend to be you and go on and get your account. So I think it's safer not to have an account with the Social Security Administration and your bank and other things like that. I think it's safer for you to go on and create it and put the most ridiculously complex password on it and put it in your password vault so that no one else could ever get on and try to hack it. So yeah, it's yet another way of trying to secure your site is to claim all of the sites that could be yours and the very secure passwords on them.
You know, it seems like no matter what we do, and we can have the most secure password, you know, 26 characters or more and all sorts of numbers and symbols and all that. But if somebody just goes straight to whoever's storing our information and they don't, or someone is really good and adept at hacking, all of that's for naught. They're going to get it anyway. Is there really any way to protect our information, or are we just subject to this now?
At least if it's the site's fault for being hacked, they will know that they've been hacked, and they will be much more sympathetic in dealing with you.
Yeah.
If it's your fault because you put down a password of password.
Right, which a lot of people do.
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, let me in. You know, anything on the list of 1,000 known passwords.
Yeah.
If it's your fault, then you're just inviting disaster, and you're going to have to deal with a lot more hacking. Do is to be very careful of what you keep in your wallet. You should have a list of everything that you have in your wallet, because when someone steals your wallet, you're going to want to know, who am I supposed to call? And so if you just take time to take out a piece of paper, take each credit card, turn it over, write down the number and the 1-800 number you're supposed to call, then, and you leave that at your house, then when your wallet's stolen, you know where to go. You go to your that sheet of paper and you start making phone calls, trying to lock everything down.
It's an excellent idea, and all of these are so important, as I fear that it's getting more and more risky. You know, I know we've got a lot of people working on the good side trying to make things more secure, but it always seems that we're playing defense there. So we'll have to see how it goes. David Murata is online at muratahonmoney.com. And David, always great to have you here with us.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, that's going to wrap up this hour of The Shilling Show. But we come back on the other side, we'll have time for open phones. We welcome you here. Oh, my goodness, the Mary Marxist Jane Dittmar has spoken out on a couple of issues. We're going to tell you all about it if we have time. Jason Baiocchi will be with us at the bottom of the hour, and Wesley Smith on the culture of death, the age of do harm medicine. Imagine that.